What's up, everybody? You're listening to Guildcast with your hosts, Sean and Ruby, or Ruby and Sean, or whatever.
Welcome back, everyone, to this 27th episode of Guildcast. I'm your host, Sean, and with me once again is my co-host, Ruby. How you doing, Ruby?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. You know what's funny is sometimes I'll do these intros, and I won't know which podcast it is we're recording until about 1 second before I say the podcast name. I'm like, welcome to Guildcast.
Guildcast. What day is it?
Oh, that's not a good sign.
That's so, just your memory loss.
I attribute that
to your old age.
I think that's what it is. So we have a kind of a little newsy show this time. Thanks to, of course, Kill 10 Rats, who did some great interviewing this last week.
Oh my gosh, Ravios.
Yeah, they did a two-part article with some of the team from ArenaNet, and that's going to be probably the basis of most of the show today. And we're also going to talk about Winter's Day, which is always exciting every year. And then we're going to read a giant collection of emails that we got, most of them telling me that I'm wrong about the Mac thing. So
you suck. You know what? Can we just say, hey, you're wrong about the Mac thing, and will that throw out like 30 of the 40 emails?
No, it would maybe 5, but yeah.
Oh, okay. Actually, I was just going to say maybe we can save some time.
No, it's okay. I mean, we were just talking about this actually. There's another game on another podcast we do that I talked about, and mm-hmm. I got some heat on over it on some other forums, people kind of yelling at me about it. So if you don't know by now that I just, you know, I just don't know what I'm talking about. I mean, I'm just...
Sometimes you are wrong.
Yeah. That's my problem as a what's the word? Cyborg? I mean, I'm not a complete robot, so I can't know everything. It's that human side of me. I just
You really suck. You need to be a complete cyborg. I mean, wrong.
Yeah. Oh well. So.
But we have cool stuff to talk about this week.
Yeah, we do. And the thing we'll start off with is Winter's Day. They just recently announced the Winter's Day contest, which is always exciting, right?
I love the art contest. There are so many talented people out there, and it's such a cool chance for them to showcase what they can do. Mm-hmm. And I love all the different mediums. It just really, it's a wide open field, and I get so excited seeing the entries every year.
Yeah, I mean, like, the first year was, not to downplay, you know, the first years, but it wasn't as popular. You know, a lot of the things were kind of drawings and paintings or things like that. And then it's funny how as it progresses and how, you know, the game, as it gets older and the community gets older and bigger, we get these kind of a more variable contest entries. And there's everything from, like, last year, I think someone made a hat, didn't they? Because I remember seeing the, like, knit hat. I
mean, the people little make polar bear hat?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes!
And people make costumes, and they make everything, you know, paintings, computer art, everything. And I think it's so cool. And some of that stuff is, like, it just blows me away. Like, they should be working for ArenaNet, you know? Some of the artistry, it's amazing.
Very, very, very talented people.
Yeah. Actually, I wonder if ArenaNet ever looks at those and is like, hey, I wonder if we can hire that person.
I don't know. Do they need, like, an in-house knitter?
Well, who doesn't, you know?
You know, I feel like everybody does. Do we have one of those at Massively? We should.
Well, I know, like, early on, someone made a char doll. Like, they made this little plush char toy. And I saw it at, I think it was PAX 2007. Mm-hmm. They had it in a showcase. And I think I saw it again in 2008. So they might, like, bring it with them to PAX every year, but it's the coolest thing, you know. And there was, of course, there was the giant char. Did you ever see that? The one that's like life-size char that someone made?
Was it like a costume, or was it the char effigy?
Well, no, it was a Well, it was like a costume, but it was like on a mannequin kind of a thing. It was like a life size. And they had it set up. They brought that to PAX, too. So that was pretty awesome.
Cool. Well, my favorite was actually from this Halloween. Did you see the char effigy?
Yeah. Was it the life size one? Yeah.
Yeah, it was enormous. Well, it wasn't life size because that's like 80 feet tall. But it was human sized, and they set the thing on fire.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It was so awesome. I loved it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
So I get really excited about all these awesome, talented things that I can't do.
Oh, I know.
So, but yeah, I'm looking at the Polar Bear hat right now, and it's adorable.
And they have some good prizes this year too.
Some
Razer stuff from Razer. Like there's a headset, there's a gaming mouse, and they've been working with Razer for a long time. I had a Guild Wars Razer mouse for a while, and it died finally after
a long time.
Yeah, after a few years, but. And I, you know, the funny thing that with mice, I use them all day, every day, like literally all day. And so when I go through mice quite a bit, but what's funny is I still have my keyboard that I had since 2001.
Isn't it like giant and off-white?
It's big and it's like really loud, like here. It's one of those kind of things.
Oh my gosh.
And it's off-white. Yeah, it's awesome. But I've bought other keyboards since then and they've always died. This thing has been, it's been amazing. So, anyway, Guild Wars. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah. Now I'm all distracted by keyboards. I have the keyboard and mouse that just came with my computer last year. I'm not very fancy.
Oh, yeah. This one is actually kind of like that, too. It's nothing fancy, but yeah. Good times. Anyway, Guild Wars.
Contest
thing. Yeah, I think if anyone's listening and they're, thinking about entering, or you have an artistic streak in you, definitely, enter this. They said the deadline is 12 p.m. Pacific on December 31st. So you have a little bit of time still, like the rest of the month. So pretty awesome. And if you're a Guildcast listener and you win, you have to like put a little Guildcast thing in there somewhere, like in the bottom corner, just put Guildcast rules or something.
That would be so cool. Actually, you know what? If you enter, if some of our listeners enter, I would love to see if maybe you guys could email us some snapshots of your entries. I would love to see them.
Yeah. Actually, we had some Guildcast listeners. I don't know if they won, but I think they got they placed. There were a few. Actually, yeah, there were a few. Because I remember they contacted me and let me know. And one of them I used to play Guild Wars with all the time. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. So, yeah, throw in that. Or you can just make it a giant Guildcast thing. Like, you could paint a picture of Ruby and then send that in. Wait, you think that
works? Wow, you're not creepy at all, are you?
I don't know what you look like. I'm just guessing.
I went to PAX in, like, a Ronald Reagan mask. That's all he saw the whole time.
You had the Burger King mask on the whole time.
You looked out your hotel window. There I was.
Yeah, every time I'd ask you a question, you just turn really slowly and look at me really creepy, and then I ran away.
All right, come on, stop. I'm going to have nightmares.
Okay, so let's talk about this Ravius Kill 10 Rats interview.
Yes, it was so cool.
Yeah, so essentially what he did is he got he got Martin Kirstein, he got Regina Buenabra, he got John Peters, and Isaiah Cartwright. He's also known as Izzy. Those four were together. And that was it, right? Just those four?
Yeah, those four, and this had to be like an epic phone call.
Yeah, definitely. And so it was like this big interview that he did, basically discussing, the different aspects. And the first one was like energy. It was basically energy and group dynamics were kind of covered in that first one. So you want to talk a little bit about what that was about, and of course the forum explosion afterwards.
I really think this seemed... And I'm absolutely not downplaying it at all, because I was excited as anybody else. I think this seemed even bigger than it was because we've had such a lack of information lately. So I was like, I was just insanely excited to see this. And Ravius is my new favorite person. But what they, in a very, very, very small nutshell, Guild Wars 2, as far as your energy bar, is going to reward offensive play more than it does defensive play. They want you to get in there and participate in the fight and play strategically, getting in there and playing off of your teammates. And you're basically going to use less energy. The more you participate, the less energy you use. If you're just like standing there and self-healing, you're going to use up a ton of energy. If you're dodging and rolling, one example they gave was if you just stand there and like take a Drake's fire breath, if you just take that damage and heal up, you're going to use a ton more energy than you would in that self-heal than you would if you use some energy to roll out of the way. Mm-hmm. And if you're standing out of the way just self-healing, or the more defensively you play, the more defensive skills you use, the more energy you use. And something that Isaiah Cartwright said, if players are not aware of the battlefield, they will be using more defensive skills, which would ultimately lead to energy exhaustion. There's this really, really big push to pay attention to your surroundings and not be, this is something I've said a couple times in the past few weeks, not be a lazy player, which is something that I've actually turned into.
Yeah.
And this is going to be hard for me just because I am, it's just muscle memory now to stay out of the way, to stay out of melee and just blindly spam area of effect fire skills. And that would kill me in Guild Wars 2. I'm going to need to pay attention to what's happening in the battle. Pay attention to what my teammates are doing and how I can play off of them to make our combined skills greater than the sum of their parts and make this battle end quickly.
Hmm. Well, do you think that's really what it's about? Is about spamming? I mean, because I wouldn't think that that's what they're aiming for.
No, I don't think so. I think if you just, again, like I said, if you just blindly spam, it's going to go badly for you.
Well, yeah, but I mean, do you think that that's what the problem is now? Like, do you think that that's what they're trying to fix?
I don't know if they're trying to fix something that's broken or improve upon what we already have. Because I know they're really pushing toward immersion. And I'm thinking this through because you caught me off guard.
That's what I do best.
I don't think anything is broken as it stands. I think it can stand to be improved, and there is this whole trend in Guild Wars 2 development. There's this whole thought process of we've got something great in Guild Wars 1. Mm-hmm. We can have something so much better in Guild Wars 2 because it's 5 years later. We've got the resources, we've got the technology to do so much more. And I think that's where they're going with this. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's so much trying to fix something that's broken as it is using the resources that they did not have back then and they do have now to the fullest. Mm-hmm. And it's just the battlefield dynamics, as explained here to me, are just so much better than what we have now. And there's not anything wrong with what we have now.
Yeah.
People would disagree with that, but that's totally, that is complete opinion. That is, I need like a pre-recorded disclaimer. That is my opinion. So I think it's an improvement more than a fix. I don't know. Well, how do you see it?
Yeah, I see it as an improvement. I think it's another one of those things where it's changing, you know, and it's the big change that I think a lot of people are afraid of. I think the skill bar is a big, you know, a good example of that, where, you know, at first we heard that we're only getting this 10 slot skill bar, where, you know, we're getting the 5 skills for the weapon and 1 for healing and so on. And I think a lot of people were kind of confused by that. And it's like when you're developing something, you know, you're so immersed in it, as ArenaNet is, I'm sure, over, you know, several years in how this is going to change. So when they present things, it might be kind of hard to present it as a, you know, someone just reading it for the first time. So they'll present it, and then they'll kind of have to go back and clarify certain things. And I think that's kind of what this is. It's one of those things where we're getting this information, so conclusions are being jumped to as to how it's going to work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so then, clarifications kind of go from there. Because we can't, there's no way that we can, you know, when we present something like that, and I'm saying this from from experience, but there's no way you can really present anything to cover all bases the first time. You know, you have to kind of do follow-ups and things like that. So I'm I really try to reserve judgment on announcements like this, or I guess this isn't really an announcement, you know, just the introduction of something new. I try to reserve judgment until we get that follow-up. And ArenaNet's been really good at doing that, actually. You know, when they reveal new stuff, they'll come back the next week and have, like, their own little Q&A where they'll take questions from, you know, the forums and things like that, and then, you know, kind of answer them. So I want to see how that works out. I want to see how, you know, what their follow-up is before I kind of go too nuts with
it. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but I think overall, though, if it does work like that, you know, they're kind of rewarding you for doing more, you know. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. It's just, I really feel like it's going to make us think instead of, again, just standing back, finding a skill or skill combination that works for you, and just standing in the back spamming it. It's not going to, you're going to burn out really fast if you try to do that here.
Yeah.
So they're really, I think they're pushing us to become more reactive on the battlefield and to pay more attention, which I love.
Yeah, yeah.
Remind me, I said that when I'm cursing, when I have to learn this. This sucks.
Well, I think it's funny. This is something that I was actually talking with someone about this week, about the whole thing with, you know, there are many, many, many games out there, especially MMOs, where you want to just skip the quest text, you know, where you, the games are set up to you, where you want to just level as fast as possible. You know, I'm going to pick on World of Warcraft here, but that's a perfect example. You know, they keep making the leveling faster and faster, mm-hmm. to where it's now you can get into the 20s in a couple hours, and, probably less than that, actually, because it's been, I don't know, it just keeps getting ramped down, you know, where it's, you can just completely skip the quest text, you don't read it. I mean, all these writers took so long to write these quests, and nobody reads them, you know, and because it's developed for one thing, and that's getting to the end game so that you can play the new expansion. So, I really like the fact that there are games out there that really make you pay attention. And I'm going to bring up a game here that I talked about in my last podcast because I absolutely love it. But it's Worm Online.
Oh, yay.
And I get on these little, you know, kicks where I love games to death for, you know, for a little while. But Worm Online is a perfect example of a game where you have to really pay attention. There's no in-game map. You know, here's my example where I was talking to someone about it. You get in a boat in that game, and you go in the water, and, you know, the wind kind of directs you, but you can fight against the wind in your sailboat. You know, you have to have certain skill and all this stuff. So I'm going around, and I'm going completely by sight. I'm looking at, you know, landmarks and things like that, and I got lost. And then it got to the point where I was talking to, you know, my friends in local chat, and I said, you know, how am I going to get back? And so they had some ideas of looking for landmarks, you know, seeing where it was at, and then there's actually a map on the wiki that, not an in-game map, but a map, you know, on an external website.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, from there, I'm taking points, and I'm looking, and then I'm kind of gauging direction, which there's no direction in the game. And then I finally made my way back. But that, to me, was so much fun, because I had to pay attention. I didn't, mm-hmm. you know, there weren't quests that were popping up from NPCs standing around with, you know, yellow punctuation over their head. It was based on what I was looking at, you know, what I'm seeing, the direction based on the sun. I mean, the sun was rising and setting, and then I could tell east or west. The way the wind was blowing and all this stuff, you can kind of gauge where you're at, and I was just paying attention. And I literally said in there, this is the most I've paid attention in an MMO in a long time. And, you know, the other mechanics of the game aside, just that fact of, I mean, that's real immersion, you know.
Exactly.
People talk about immersion all the time, but immersion is realizing where you're at in the game and realizing, you know, how important everything is together, not just that quest guy with the punctuation overset. You know, it's, I don't know, I was really pleasantly surprised by that, and it was such a simple thing. You know, it sounds so simple. It's like, well, yeah, duh. You know, if you can do that in any game, well, yeah, you can. But they make it so that there are so many shortcuts where you don't really have to do that. You know, an arrow pointing your way in the radar. You know, people are going to be looking at. I mean, I don't care if I'm the type of person who loves immersion or not. If I see that little yellow arrow pointing my way to the next quest, I'm probably going to follow it. You know,
you're going to make a beeline. Yeah.
Yeah. So. I'm just saying, basically, I hope that some of these types of mechanics are at least appreciated and realized or implemented in Guild Wars 2.
I would be very surprised if they were not. I mean, they've spent so much time talking about even things right down to the ambient sound around you and how you can hear two guys like whispering in a dark alley.
Yeah,
and if you go, I mean, and it's just like off to the side as you happen to walk by, and you've got the option to stop and go check that out.
Mm-hmm.
And it can start an event chain.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I like that a lot. I'm glad you brought that up because that's one of those things where you turn your head and you listen to see, wait, where is that conversation coming from? What are they talking about? That's immersion. You know, that's something I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, I love it.
So I guess we're on a little tangent there, which is so weird
that's
for me.
I know. We never go on tangents. We're always just like, you know, straight road. But you know what? There is a little downside to this, something that people were a little unsure about, and that was the discussion of potions. And we talked about that a little bit the other day. And I'm going to go very quote-heavy here, just because it's a little bit of a fuzzy mechanic to me, and I'm not sure if it's that I'm not understanding it or if they're deliberately being vague at this point. I'm leaning toward deliberate vagueness. But they talked a lot about potions in this same part of the interview. Potions are items with a recharge that are used to replenish a significant amount of energy, like 60% of the bar. Potions are very cheap and very abundant, and they are not used to determine success of the encounter. ArenaNet didn't want a system where it pushed a player to run out of potions in order to make the player lose. I'm sorry. Bleh. So you've got those in a battle. Potions were another way to let players decide on the difficulty of the encounters they wanted to attempt. So this is really, I mean, potions are turning out to be a big part of the game, and I think a lot of people are a little uncertain about how they feel about that.
Well, is it mainly that they're upset that it's becoming so item-heavy, so, you know, reliant on items, or what?
I think so. There was a lot of talk about, ew, it's like Diablo. And I don't think that's, you know, like the fast track to a bad game. Let's see. I'm kind of looking through just to see if I can find a really specific gripe about potions. Okay, here's someone on, and this is on Kill 10 Rats. He had some fantastic comments. I'm not satisfied with their reasoning for energy potions. For me, as a measurement for efficient fighting, the time and harshness of the fight are enough. If the enemy went down fast and easily without anyone in my group biting the dust, I did good. If it went that smoothly that I can go for the next group without waiting for the monks to replenish their energy, all the better. I see no reason to change to this to the Guild Wars 2 system. Managing one's energy in Guild Wars 1 was somewhat of a skill, too. The only reason I get for using this system is that of a gold sink. So I think it's just, and I don't want to minimalize, I don't want to trivialize anybody's concerns. I think it's a reaction to a change. I mean, we tend to react negatively to big changes like this, especially when we're used to something. And B, a lack of information. Until we have all the details on potions, it's really easy to speculate negatively.
Yeah,
definitely. So I kind of hesitate to go down that road.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I want to see.
Yeah, I guess I can see that. We talked about that on Massively Speaking quite a bit, too. I don't know. To me, I do see that whole Diablo, that worry about the way Diablo is set up, where it's so heavily, you know, so heavy on potion usage. I don't know. I mean, I speculated on the fact that maybe they're going to be selling the potions in the item shop, but that's, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? I don't know.
Well, even if they are in the item shop, they said pretty clearly in Ravius' interview that you can buy them at in-game vendors.
Yeah.
So even if they are in the item shop, you can still get them with in-game gold. So I'm not too concerned about that.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, let's move on to the second part of his interview then. And this one covers more of like elite skills and even some mention of PvP, which is probably one of the biggest questions still out there. A lot of people are asking, like they email us and, you know, they comment and ask us, you know, have you heard anything about PvP? That seems to be a really popular question. And they did, of course, they didn't get too much into it about details and everything, but I think it focuses on the skills themselves, you know, about elite skills and how they're going to work and how, you know, how the weapon skills are going to work, the five weapon skills. And I think the main point here is they're talking about how important those weapon skills are, mm-hmm. Because they acknowledge the fact that there can be broken builds in Guild Wars 1. You know, you can put all res sigs or all shouts or, you know, you can do that, and it would be funny for a second, but it's not very practical. Well, they're talking about in Guild Wars 2, that's not going to be really an option. You know, you're not going to be able to do that, at least, you know, I mean, people do it, I'm sure, you know, on purpose to be funny, but it's one of those things, you know, if you have a weapon in your hand, you're going to have those five skills taken care of, you know, and then you're going to have your heal and your other ones, you know, your race ones kind of already established, so it's going to be a lot harder to do that. The weapon ones especially, since they take up half the bar right there, he even says that there's, you know, there's a combination that can be used, and, you know, with the race skills and everything, and how those have all been thought of, you know, like they've already gone through these and kind of figured everything out. I'll believe that when I see it, but know, balancing the skills in Guild Wars, oh man, that is, I mean, Izzy, I think that's like his job, like every day.
He's not enough. 40 hours a week of that. I say this in a good way. Hmm. It's a compliment. You absolutely cannot keep ahead of the Guild Wars players that like to play with their bars. They are a really, really clever bunch.
Yeah, yeah. But it's the game is made to be like that. You know what I mean? It's and I think that's really cool. The way you can kind of, you know, in that Pokemon way where you can collect your collect your skills and arrange them in certain ways that work well together. So that, I mean, as much as we love that and as much as we love setting up builds like that are so unique, and, you know, especially those early days of Guild Wars, I mean, those were incredible days when people would set up just, you know, builds that would make you invincible almost. And of course they got nerfed, you know, within the next week, but just the fact that they were able to do that, well, now you know, we're not really going to be able to do that with Guild Wars 2, which is kind of sad, but at the same time it's less of a headache for the, you know, for ArenaNet.
You know what I keep thinking of is a monk that was in my guild about a year ago, and I think I told you about her. We were also, and she was a young kid, she was a teenager, so, you know, I'll give her a little bit of leeway there, but just a very little. Not enough to excuse this. We were all ready to go, and she was our healer, and we were kind of concerned, and we were like, so, can we see your bar? Mm-hmm. Just, you know. Yeah. And I think we made some lame excuse, like, you know, I want to make sure that Tal'Kor is a good foil for you. She pings her bar, she had four hard reses.
Oh.
People like her are why I like this system.
The new system?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. I think that's probably why they, you know, made it this way.
To save people from themselves.
To save groups from...
And to save me from that.
Yeah. But... Yeah, I mean, at the same, it kind of takes out the highs and lows there. You know, it takes out the best, you know, builds that can be, you know, farming builds, things like that, and then it takes out the stuff like you're talking about, and it kind of neutralizes that and makes a good middle ground for everyone, which I think is only fair. This is one of those things, you know, when we start doing our like roundtable shows, this would be a great topic to talk about that.
Ooh, but, yeah, I want to do that.
What do you think about the second part of this article and what was said?
You know, I'm inclined to really like what they're setting up here, but I'm tempering that with two things. One, I'm trying to rein in the fangirling and look at this objectively, which is just, you know, so I don't go completely
impossible.
Insane.
Oh.
Well, it's difficult. But two, I'm looking at this with cautious optimism. I'm looking at this saying, okay, I like where they're going with this. I like the immersion. I like making us work and think. But we don't know everything yet. So I'm kind of, the best I'm willing to say is, I like where this is going. Mm-hmm. I want to know more.
Well, what do you think about some of the examples they use a little bit later on when they're talking about... I like this little story that they give. I think it's John Peters that was talking about this. That they brought in... You know, this is while they're testing Guild Wars 2. And there's this elite skill called Tornado.
Yes!
And so the people are dying everywhere in the group, and you know they need some room to be able to res these people or bring them back from their down state. And so the elite casts Tornado, which basically throws every opponent away. You know, it spins them around and throws them back. And that gives enough time for the reser to go through and bring everyone back. And then they, you know, it's a battle-changing moment. And that's kind of their point there, is that these elite skills are battle-changing moments. Now, they don't really say anything about, or at least I don't think they say anything about, like, cooldown, or if these are only usable once. I don't know.
See, that's where I'm... This is such a good example of what I was just saying, that I'm trying to rein in the fangirl, because he explained the Tornado skill, and I was immediately like, oh, hell yes. But then I'm like, okay, wait a minute, though. How often can I use that?
Well, actually, he has a line in here. Ravius wrote this. It says, the time element, and he's got recharge in parentheses, is used to a lesser degree to focus player attention on available skill choices for weapon skills and utility skills, but the huge pace-changing elites will be kept at a longer recharge. So I think right there they're saying, of course there's going to be a longer recharge because they are game, event-changing skills, you know. You can't just make a tornado every 5 seconds, right? I mean,
see,
I can't. So
I can, well, it's because you're a mesmer, duh.
Oh, right.
You know, this to me is more of what an elite skill should be. Mm-hmm. An elite skill should not be spammable. And I'm thinking this through as I say it because I want to get this out right. On one hand, I don't know if I'm going to like losing that really good skill that I can use constantly.
Yeah, but...
Because, oh my gosh, Tornado. Ha! Huh, cool!
But at the same time, I mean, you can't really expect to be able to use something like that all the time.
Right. And the way they're setting this up, it sounds like more of what an elite should be.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, when they're designing an elite skill, it should be something that is like last resort... You know,
epic.
Yeah, very epic. I mean, if they tone it down and make it so you can use it more, I wouldn't like that as much. You know, I think like, you know, Meteor Shower is a good example because, you get the exhaustion and people will just spam that every time it recharges and then they don't have any, you know, they're completely exhausted and they're like, what's going on?
I don't understand.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, that worked to that degree, but to go even higher than that, you know, you can only use it once or you can only use it maybe every 5 minutes or something like that. I mean, I think that would be something we need.
Yeah, I don't think I'm... I think maybe this is like teaching me how not to be a lazy player. It's good. I'm not going to like it for a while. But it's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and I cannot wait to use that skill and just make everything fly away.
That'd oh, awesome. My gosh. I know. I'm so excited.
It reminds me, actually, there's a skill in Fable 3 very similar to that. It's like a fire tornado kind of a thing. Ooh. And when people are surrounding you, you can cast it, and it makes everybody kind of rise up, like, really slowly, and then go in the circle, you know, of the fire tornado.
Fun.
And it's so awesome. So I picture it like that. You know, I picture it very similar to that. It'd be kind of cool. So, yeah, I mean, the rest of this article... It's harping on that, you know, that focus of how important these skills would be. And they're saying, okay, every profession will have about 20 utility skills in addition to the racial ones, and there are 4 to 5 heals and 4 to 8 elites per profession. And this is on top of all the weapon skills and the skills that change upon use, like the necromancer's minion skills. So we have that choice. You know, we still have such a huge... thing to work with, I guess. Thing, that's my word that when I can't think of the word I'm trying to think of.
I think it's the technical term. You can substitute stuff if you need to.
Okay. Or mechanics. I heard that works really well.
You know, though, this, exactly what you're saying, and I hate to play this card, But this is something, this is what I said when all of the skill information first came out and everybody was screaming about how restrictive it was. I kept saying, just look, just stop for a second and read. This is not restrictive. It's giving us even more options than what we had before.
Yep. Yeah, so it should be pretty exciting to see how this all works out.
I love it.
So let's go ahead and get into the emails now, because we have quite a bit. I think one I have this email from Farkas, and he wrote... let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4 times, I think. So he's very, very enthusiastic. This one is from, this is from a while back, and he's talking about the wedding costumes. He says, so they recently added the wedding costumes, right? Well, I know that the fans who keep up with Guild Wars Beyond are speculating many things. Well, here's another perspective from a friend. I was at his house this weekend going to do the Underworld for the first time. I got whooped. Maybe it's not time yet, but I had fun though, so it was almost worth the price of entry. Wow, sidetracked, that's what he says. At any rate, when my friend got on, his exact words were, wedding costumes? That's just stupid. I tried to explain, and he could care less. I think that to anyone who's not in the hype bubble, the costumes probably just seem dumb. And here's the idea. Getting the costumes could allow you admission to some special quest line eventually. I think that ArenaNet could use this to experiment with quest lines that are acquired by buying a certain item for cash. Yes, it's similar to the expansion's quest lines, but sneakier. Though it seems out of character for ANet to make you pay for additional content, they did release the expansion mission so it could happen. I'm not saying it's likely, but it's still possible that they are experimenting with the concept for possible use in Guild Wars 2. Yes, seems unlikely, but couldn't hurt to mention. I thought that was pretty interesting. What do you think? Do you think that that would work to be able to buy items that allow you content?
I think people would go out of their minds.
Yeah, I think so too.
Seriously. And I don't, I mean... This is another thing. If you stop and think about it, it's no different than purchasing the bonus mission pack.
Yeah, exactly.
You pay a couple bucks, get an extra content, just one content. But this, buying a costume, the presenting it that way, people would flip out.
Yeah. I think it would be a cool idea. Like if you know, buying a costume to get into the wedding or something like that. Like, that would be really cool. Like, the implementation of that would be brilliant, and it would be really cool for...
It's black tie only.
Yeah, but... yes, exactly. And that's when I was reading this, I thought exactly like you're saying. You know, people would flip out, even though if you could sell the exact... Like, if you could sell that wedding access as bonus content for $5, and people could just buy it and go play it, or... Buy a costume for $5 and then get into the wedding. People would go nuts over the wedding, the costume one, but not nuts over the just buying it straight out.
Yes.
And I don't really understand why that would happen, but I guarantee it would happen.
It's just perception and presentation. Yeah. And see, I'm sitting here thinking I'd be absolutely cool with that. I would be happy to, but I buy all the costumes anyway.
Yeah.
So, but not everybody enjoys that aspect of the game like I do. Mm-hmm. And can you imagine the screaming?
Oh well, people would. Everybody would still buy it, but they would just complain about it. I think also it would bring up a lot of like, well, I thought you said you weren't going to make us pay for like game changing things. You know, like you know, paying for the exclusivity of being able to access certain content through the item shop or cash shop or whatever you're going to call it. So I think that that's it's always a kind of a sore point. You know, people have been burned by that. These companies who keep making item shops keep saying, we're not going to do that. We're not going to make it so that the game is based on, you know, any kind of outcome of the game is based on what you can buy with real money.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that although I think it would be cool, personally, I don't think it would go over very well, a lot of people.
Same here.
Okay, so this next one says, hi, Subi and Ron.
Is that a new one? I think that's a new one.
I think that's a new one, yeah. A couple Heart of the North comments and a little ranting. Uh-oh. On the first day of the new content, right after slapping down the credit card for the new costumes, I went on the hunt for Kieran. I learned that having any War and Krita bounties active caused some trouble. I zoned into a Crichton area, and I found Kieran. He just fell right out of a tree, meandered around daydreaming about Gwen, easy as pie. Second point, once I figured out what I was supposed to be doing, a.k.a. the wiki got updated, I have to say I had trouble with the first Kieran mission. What worries me the most was reflected in Ruby's latest Flameseeker. This is what Guild Wars 2 might be like. I really enjoyed being the master of a small army of bots, and frankly, I suck at self-healing, so I just hope I can get with the groove come Guild Wars 2. Now for a little ranting. Polymox sucks. A lot.
Yay!
Whoever came up with it needs a good Nerf bat to the head. Oh, and I hate hard mode with a passion as well. Wish it wasn't necessary for so many titles. That wasn't too ranty. Thanks, and have a great holiday. Flip side.
I have, like, these involuntary reactions just popping out.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I loathe Polymock. I hate Polymock so bad. And it's probably sour grapes because I suck at it so much.
Yeah, yeah.
If anybody loves Polymock, I would really love to hear from you because I haven't found that person yet. I got some sort of fancy Polymock piece, I think at the end of Slaver's Exile. And I went to Alliance chat because I didn't want the thing. I went to Alliance chat. I was like, I have a gold Polymock piece, something. I don't even remember what it was. And it was like this chorus of, no. That said, I almost always play hard mode now. I love hard mode so much. Mm. So I'm sorry.
Yeah, I like hard mode too. I don't know. I guess I can see why, you know, if you just want to enjoy yourself, I mean, hard mode can be a little frustrating at times, but now as far as Polymock, what's funny about it is it seems on paper like it would work for a Guild Wars crowd. You know, you're taking something that's essentially collecting and organizing, and you know, collections are always a big hit in MMOs. So you take that and then you play them, you know, together in kind of a like a Pokemon type of a thing, and you'd think it would work, but nobody likes it. I don't know. Poor Polymock.
Oh, I hate it so bad.
All right, so this next email says, hello there, Sean and Ruby. Actually, it says Ruby and Sean, but I changed it because says, this is Validus again. Last Thursday, I was really bored, and I didn't want to play Guild Wars because I already had GWAMM. I spent almost 1 million in gold getting mini pets so I can reach 50 points. Yes, I'm bragging a bit. For whatever reason, however, I open the Guild Wars page, and oh my god, Gwen is getting married. I then click it, and oh my god, formal costumes. So I run out of the room and get my wallet because I'm thinking, finally, a costume I feel like buying. I finally find my credit card, I come back to the computer, and I start looking through my costume options. I look at the Dapper Tuxedo page, and I'm thinking, ooh, that's a neat costume for female characters, and I'm really digging the male tux. I then look behind door number 2, the formal attire, and I think beautiful dress for the female characters. But wait, there's the same tux for male characters. That's a bit of a downer. But wait, there's door number 3, the wedding couple attire, ooh la la. I open the page, and I'm thinking, ah, that dress is so pretty, and what the... This tux looks exactly like the other two, except someone added a cape/scarf combo thing, and then some other thing to define the waist. My hype went from a 10 all the way down to a 2. Basically, I'm writing this email because I'm very disappointed with ArenaNet regarding the costumes for this event. Although I never personally liked the costumes prior to these, I always thought they looked unique and catered to everyone. What I mean is that before there was always one male and one female costume, and regardless of your character's gender, there was always one option. However, this time around, female character players have 3 distinct costume options, while male characters have 1, because let's face it, accessorizing an outfit differently doesn't make it a new outfit. So my question is, why do female characters players get 3 distinct costume options when male character players don't even have 2 distinct costume options? Now, I understand that the male costumes are tuxedos, and that for the most part, they look the same, but off the top of my head, I can list 3 things that could have easily been changed to make them 2 similar yet distinct costumes. I'm someone who takes immense pride in my outfits, both in real life and in game, and I find it disheartening when, for whatever reason, I'm given less options than someone else to customize my looks. Basically, it makes me feel that male character players were second thoughts on the creating process of these costumes. Enough of me ranting. What are your thoughts? Do you think it's all right to give some players more armor or costumes based on the gender of their characters? Now, how about different professions? Do you think certain professions should have more armors than others? For example, the warrior, which has 3 complete sets of armor, more than some of the other core professions. Again, thank you for the shows. Sincerely, Validus Oranos. P.S. I, too, am bitter about the fact that I don't have a witch's hat. I QQ about it every Halloween. I can answer this very easily. Okay, if you've ever been at a wedding or even prom, I guess, any kind of formal event like that, men basically rent their tux for about $100, and women have to buy a several hundred-dollar dress. So this is payback for that. Okay, go ahead. Your turn.
The boys got screwed. I mean, honestly, and this is one of those things where I'm kind of back and forth, because on one hand, it's kind of like you said, it follows real life. I mean, go to the mall. My gosh, go to the mall. Look at how many women's clothing stores there are.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, we're talking about a world where I wave my hand and bring fire shooting out of the sky.
Yeah.
So some different tuxes don't seem like too much to ask. I have all female characters. And after listening to the screaming for about 48 hours in-game, I deleted one character that had kind of fallen out of favor just so I could make a male character and take a look for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it was disappointing. I would have liked to see, oh my gosh, the women in the game look fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think I was showing you screenshots, and they're so gorgeous. And then I made this, I think his name is like Costume Stud, is this character I made.
Nice.
Because I wanted to see. And I'm looking, and I'm just kind of like, that's it? Really? You get a shorter top hat? And then,
yeah.
Like you said, a scarf thing. I don't know. It was a little disappointing to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to be kind of understanding by saying, well, look at how many options real-life women have as opposed to men, like you said. So I don't know. I don't like it, but maybe I understand it.
Yeah, I think it is. It's kind of a, like, that's the way things are, you know, in real life, and we just, kind of have to suck it up. Because, you go to a formal shop like that, and there are men's formal wear shops that have 400 tuxedos with maybe the button is in a different place, or, the collar is a little bit higher on a couple of them, but they're all the same. I mean, they all look exactly the same to me. I wear t-shirt and jeans. I don't know anything about this stuff. So it's
wedding.
Yeah, to my wedding. So it's just one of those things where, it's just a traditional thing with, men's formal wear versus women's formal wear. You know, you look at suits, they're kind of the same thing. They're, they have stripes on them maybe, I mean, the ones I wear, they're purple with the yellow stripes, isn't it?
You don't wear suits.
Oh, right. So
that's your pretend suit.
So I just think it's following that kind of a tradition, And I don't think it, I don't know. I mean, this is a big, a big, it could go deeper into like a gender equality thing, which I'm not even going to touch. But
please don't.
Yeah, it's not, I don't think that's what it is. I think it's just basically, a tradition on formal clothes. And I think that traditionally, men don't have as wide of a variety as women do, but it's not. I don't think men really care. You know what I mean? They're like, "Which suit am I supposed to buy?"
Will someone please just tell me?
Yeah, and then they buy that one, and they're done. I just think that's. I mean, that's probably. I don't know. I'm probably going to offend people by saying that, but I think that's just how it is. Like he's mentioning here also about the professions. And how they can get more or less armor based on the profession. That, I think, is a totally different thing. And, yeah, I would definitely agree that that's a little unfair, that I hate the word unfair so much.
Now you have to say how they're forcing us to do something.
Yeah, they're forcing us to... No. It's... but I think that's a different issue. And, yeah, I think that overall should probably be balanced a little bit better.
Yeah.
I don't know. Are you biting your tongue now? Or?
No, I'm actually. I thought of something while we were talking, and I hopped over to the NCSoft store real quick. As far as it following real life, there was another point that you mentioned about the cost, and I was thinking, yeah, guys have less options, but they pay a lot less for it.
Yeah.
So should that follow as far as the cost in the NCSoft store?
Uh-oh.
And I was looking real quick, but I don't really see any way. I mean, I'm looking at the options here, and I don't really see any way that could be done.
Yeah.
So.
Could you imagine what would happen if the male tuxedos were cheaper? Like,
it seems like there
would be explosions everywhere.
Torches, pitchforks. Yeah. I don't know. It seems like it could be an option. I don't really, again, looking at what's on offer here, I don't see how it could be done.
Yeah.
To me, the best solution would be just come up with another tuxedo. And that's, I guess, in a way, that's like saying, just make another instance. It's just a thing. It's no big deal.
Just so, make a sequel. Just make a sequel.
It's no big deal. It's just, geez, you just have to type like three keys.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm not sure what the solution is. Again, I don't like it all that much, but I understand it.
Mm-hmm. Now, are all the costumes dyeable?
The wedding couple attire is not dyeable. It's fixed. Black tux, white gown.
Okay.
Everything else is dyeable, and cool. I have to say it takes dye so beautifully.
So I could have a purple tuxedo then?
You could absolutely have a purple tuxedo.
Awesome.
My Ellie, you know what? My Ellie has a purple tuxedo.
That's cool. Awesome. I'm going to go buy that right now.
I think you should. I think everybody should buy all the costumes. And I'm sure everyone agrees with me.
Everyone, yes. Okay, let's move on to this next email. It says, hey, Sean and Ruby, and I swear it says this. I'm not making this up. It says,
I don't believe you anymore.
You really have to put Sean first, seeing how he's the main host.
You are... No.
I did not make that up.
You're a liar. I can't even trust you to forward it to me because you'll change it.
It says, this is Boom Ha Ha, You're Dead.
Okay, that's now I know you're making it up.
That's the character name. Hailing from the Immortal Kiss Alliance. I just wanted to put in a word about the new classes for Guild Wars 2. Not that they're going to be, but rather I was just wondering if you had thoughts about the new god alignments. Like, you know how Duena likes monks and Balthazar likes fire ellies and warriors? We need to consider how Cormyr will fit into that system. I've only been playing for 2 years, so I wasn't a listener to your old podcast, but you guys are doing a great job, and I love listening to your podcast during the couple of hours and every other week when I have time to play Guild Wars. Keep it up. I'm a fan. Sincerely, Boom Ha Ha, You're Dead. P.S. Now, I swear I'm not making this up. P.S. Thank you for the rant on entitlement. I know some people needed to hear that. This email was not made up in any part by me, I promise.
All is forgiven.
So we've actually talked about that before. We've kind of speculated on the gods and how important or not important they'll be in Guild Wars 2. And how Cormyr will fit into that as well.
I want to make a joke about how Cormyr will favor the healing class because they can remove the blind condition.
Or they could...
But I can't quite figure out how it would go.
Well, she could be for ritualists, because they have the blindfold on.
They have the thingy.
Yeah.
All right, I'm on board with that.
So now we just started rumor that they're bringing the ritualists back.
Oh, Lord. I honestly... Who will Cormyr like? Well, we don't know if we have Paragons back yet. I don't know. I'm so irritated with Cormyr. I don't want to think about this. You decide. Look what she did.
It will be the mix between Paragons and Ritualists. They'll be just blinds. They'll be throwing spears blindly everywhere.
Oh, that should end well.
Okay, so the next email. Hello, Guildcasties. Yeah, this is about a subject that keeps coming up, and so I thought I'd send my quick thoughts. As for the existence of an in-game store, I feel the one in Guild Wars is perfect, and the reasons are simple. If you buy storage, which is clearly optional, as you guys informed, you own that storage. It's not renting storage for a month. All the armor is entirely optional. It's purely cosmetic. I've bought all released armor, but that is mainly for the reason of having played 1,500 hours in a game that cost me about $30 to $40, and I want to show Anet my love.
No kidding.
This gets me to the point of the in-game store in Guild Wars 2. I'm quite sure they'll handle it the same way in the next game, and the hated transmutation stones are one of these items. If you look back at the armors in Guild Wars, there is something for everyone. The main armor I can see myself buying transmutation stones for is special parts. Say, for example, you help a clan of Grawl, and they appoint you chief. You'll get a Grawl crown, and it'll be level 40 item. Hey, that would be awesome.
That would. I love that.
A few months later, it's time for Halloween, and I want to go as a Grawl chieftain. This is when I get my old crown out and find some boring level 80 armor and transmute it. That's my thoughts on it. And yeah, Miku is stupid. He puts in all caps.
Aww.
If you meet two Rezzers and an assassin, don't try and kill the assassin first. Sheesh. With love, Felidin Windlore. Very
I always cool. like to hear from Felidin.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have issues with Miku's AI, but I've already gone over that like 15 times and been roundly scolded for it, so.
That hasn't stopped us before.
Not so much, no.
But yeah, I think the transmutation stones, that's essentially how they'll work. And I've mentioned this before I think the first time I saw something like this was in Runes of Magic, and that's exactly how it's handled. You know, it's using a skin of one thing and putting the stats from something else, you know, and kind of mixing it together. I think it's a great idea. I think it's a great system.
I'm a fan, and I don't know. Okay, this is me biting my tongue. We've already yelled about transmutation stones a lot.
Uh-oh. Okay, so this next one is... It's a big one. It says, "Hello, Tome of the Ruby Sean." And then he says...
Very clever!
He says, "Was that used before? I don't remember." No, it wasn't.
No, I like it!
Lucas here, in-game name Emma Gemini, MVOP. Cool.
Oh, hey, I think I met him in Seattle.
Oh, okay. Here comes a long one. Take a deep breath. I have three topics to cover, all related to Guild Wars 2 design, Hearts of the North, Energy, and Mesmer. A lot of this pertains to the stuff we just talked about, so... Pretty awesome. I agree completely with Ruby. Hey, wait a minute. I don't like this either.
I love this guy.
Heart of the North was a taste of Guild Wars 2 combat. And I also agree that it was the most exciting part. It's amusing how Guild Wars 2 began when ArenaNet realized that their design aspirations were too grand for Guild Wars 1. And now it's coming back around and being worked into Guild Wars 1. Kieran's and Miku's skill bars mimicking the basic Guild Wars 2 skill set, their teamwork being greater than the sum of its parts, and energy being effectively removed as a resource in combat all brought me back to playing the PAX demo. It makes me wonder how much these missions are a proof of concept for Guild Wars 2 design, as it seems Izzy and the gang are still unsettled as to how to treat energy. That's the impression I'm left with after the Kill 10 Rats first interview was published this morning. That was from 4 days ago. Even though the team has the luxury of testing Guild Wars 2, this Guild Wars 2-ification of Guild Wars 1 could be done for them as much as it is for us. How does gameplay change if the player's focus isn't distracted by energy? For me, once I realized that at 20 expertise, Kieran had the stamina of a thoroughbred, and I don't need to do any head math when using skills. I was able to engage much deeper in watching for Miku's callouts and using the right skill at the time. I suspect the Guild Wars 1 UI also allowed the team to test Guild Wars 2 design concepts. We know in Guild Wars 2 that instead of calling targets, a skill will allow players to mark enemies. And he says, was it called On My Mark? Mm-hmm. That's right. Right. Yeah. I don't know if T-spacing will still apply in Guild Wars 2, but I'm willing to bet that removing that crutch in Heart of the North was intentional. One of the primary design goals for Guild Wars 2 seems to be bridging the gap between UI and actual gameplay, and the main method of this is making skill effects visually recognizable. Regardless of whether the lack of T-space was intentional, we should look at how well the Guild Wars 1 limited cues, like Miku's speech bubble and the chat message, communicate to the player. In my opinion, T-space is counterproductive to that effort, as it is purely UI. A Guild Wars 2-style visual cue, like a red glow over the target, as an uncreative example, would do the job of both the speech bubble and the chat message. Pressing T may be convenient, but having a visually obvious target would remove the need for that convenience. Makes sense. A couple thoughts on energy after reading the Kill 10 Rats interview. From what I can tell, revamping energy in Guild Wars 2 is also an effort to bridge the UI gameplay gap. Their first order of business was to remove e-management skills from the skill bar and make e-management inherent in gameplay. They're definitely subscribing to the monk school of e-management, no wasteful skill usage. While they've worked out a system with potions and long-term energy, I'm not sure they've really found a way for the energy system to benefit gameplay. I applaud Izzy's comments on dodging and blocking using less energy than healing, just like how Protz and Kiting generally use less energy in Guild Wars 1. That is absolutely the right direction. But I'm not convinced an energy system is even necessary. Right now, it seems its role is to encourage players to play more thoroughly and cooperatively. I think their conclusion on death and rezzing also applies here. Death is in itself a punishment. Well, energy management in itself is in itself a benefit, considering that smart energy usage means not using energy, and that they mean for it to play a secondary role in combat. It means we're given a redundant resource that we're not supposed to spend. I like its role as a tool for measuring efficiency, though. My reservation about potions is how they fit into the game's lore. There you go. There's another point on that as we were talking. As far as I know, based on the potions described in the novel, there is such a thing as alchemy, but that's all. I really hope they make efforts to explain from the lore perspective what energy potions are and where they come from. Dragon Age's Lyrium is a wonderful example of a fantasy game staple being woven into the story. I think anything less would be doing the Guild Wars writing team justice. I'm just going to break here for a second and say that I think an obvious choice here would be craftable potions. You know, you're going to want a person who is a potion crafter.
A potion master.
Yeah. Alchemist, I think, is the... That's what they call it in World of Warcraft. So, yeah, I think that would probably be an obvious choice instead of, you know, worrying about always buying it somewhere. So,
oh,
yeah.
I love that.
Okay, so two more paragraphs. Oh, I like this paragraph. On to Mesmers. While playing Heart of the North, I was wondering why this was the first time I'd ever enjoyed playing as a ranger. This eventually led me to realize why I love playing Mesmer. With no other class do I study enemy skills and AI than as a Mesmer. That's what makes it so much fun. I imagine PvPers are rolling their eyes right now because this aspect of Guild Wars is probably obvious to them. Even if Anet decides to tear my heart out and leave a mesmer-sized hole in my chest, I hope that the emphasis on watching and reacting to enemies and allies is as strong across all GW2 professions as it is for the mesmer. I'd be surprised if it weren't. Did I say three topics? Here's a fourth. You two really tease me with the non-rant rants. Every time I hear either of you holding your tongue, I want to scream, "Say it!" You need to do an uncensored Guildcast After Hours, published around 2 a.m. as you sit in your smoking jackets and slippers and sip brandy and talk about player entitlement, cash shops, etc., the same way Relics of Ore talks about Danica. I didn't know I had so much to say. Thanks for indulging me. Keep up the awesome work, Lucas.
Thank you, Lucas.
Wow, my voice is gone after that one. But he brought up a lot of great points there as far as, you know, the touching on kind of more clarification on the Kill 10 Rats interview that we didn't really touch on. So that's why I wanted to make sure I read all that. And also the thing about, you know, crafting potions, I think that would be...
I love that.
Yeah, I think that would be... It's kind of a gimme. I think that's probably what they'll do.
I really liked his comments on Miku's AI and T-spacing. And part of this, you know, part of my irritation with that entire thing may be exactly what I was talking about. It's forcing me not to be a lazy player, and I didn't like it. But the visual cues would be – the visual cues are very, very necessary in that case.
Yeah.
Just because – and this is what I kept running into with Miku. When you've got a group of White Mantle Knights, and she says, "I'm using – Promise of Death on White Mantle Knight." I'm like, well, crap, there's three of them. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't just control and click the right one. I have to cycle through using Tab, which is really your best option. But the problem is, and I've said this before, it's a race against the clock to tab through and find the right and figure out who's got the pink bar before the hex either runs out or is removed.
Yeah.
So that kind of thing is, I'm completely on board with the way he said the UI to gameplay, removing this T-spacing, but there needs to be a visual cue to go with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's almost like the immersion thing we were talking about. You know, putting more in there than just, that's the guy you need to get. I mean, at the same time, though, I think with immersion, with visual cues versus immersion with, like, people don't really glow like that, you know, it's a two-way street. But
well, it is, but again, I rain fire from the sky by waving my hand, so I'm less concerned about that than I am the UI to gameplay connection.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, man, that was a big one, but I want to get through as many of these emails as we can. We'll make this a little longer show because I feel bad when we don't catch up and then we have to keep skipping them every time. But yeah.
Can I just pause and I want credit because there were like 8 times there I wanted to say that's what she said and I didn't. So from the moment you picked up that email and said it's a big one.
Oh, what are we going to do with Ruby?
So I want credit for not saying that.
Okay, you get credit for that.
Thanks. I'll say it like 12 times tomorrow to make up for it. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay, so this next one is from Matt. It says, Hola, Sean and Ruby. Last Guildcast, you guys talked about being able to watch what your teammates are doing and how that will prepare you for Guild Wars 2. Mm-hmm. Watching the field is what I have heard most players call it in Guild Wars, and this skill is very, very useful in all aspects of the game, especially PvP. I know Ruby did a Darth Vader no when she had to get a PvP title for her HOM, and if she hasn't yet, this acquired skill can make it 10 times easier to get if she is doing random arenas.
I'm getting Z-keys.
I have to disagree, though, with Ruby's statement that this new contest is the closest to Guild Wars 2 that we will get. High-end PvP, yes, sorry, PvP talk, is so team-oriented that in my mind it is the closest we have to Guild Wars 2's PvP, or PvE. Hopefully it will make the learning curve much less steep between the two. I think ArenaNet is really trying to emphasize the whole is greater than the sum of its parts for Guild Wars 2, and that synergy is seen much more so in Guild Wars 1 PvP than PvE. In Guild Wars 2, I hope that with all the different bonuses that multi-class comboing provides, such as shooting an arrow through fire, that the people who have tunnel vision will look up from their bars from time to time to see what their teammates are doing. For those that have already learned those skills, I think it will give them an advantage in Guild Wars 2 till others catch on and learn from example how effective these methods can be. Regards, Matt.
Okay, I can see that. I don't know. I feel like I can't talk with any sort of knowledge or reliability about PvP, and I feel kind of bad. But
well, yeah. I mean, that's always been Guildcast's weak point, I guess. I've never been interested in PvP. I've tried it a lot. Mm-hmm. I've given it many chances. I'm just not a PvPer in any game.
You know what we need to do is get like 4 PvPers on here and just say go.
Yeah.
Like, and then we can go for coffee.
Yeah. And then I'll have to edit out a lot of curse words, I imagine. There'll be a lot of yelling and
we can get like 2 Kurziks and 2 Luxens.
Oh yeah, that would be fantastic.
But we have to get like really hardcore people that really think they're Kurzik and Luxen. That would be the best guild cast ever.
People who really ride giant turtles and live in old woods.
There is not a thing wrong with that. Do not judge. All right, so PvP, we know nothing. We're sorry.
Yeah, sorry. But I know what he's saying here, and he's saying basically that it's more, you know, the changes for Guild Wars 2 are more about PvP, right?
Yeah. Okay.
You're like, yeah, sure.
I can see what he's saying as far as the PvP being a closer look at Guild Wars 2. But again, like you said, that's Guildcast's weakness, and I don't think either of us can really speak to that, and we kind of have to take your word for it and nod wisely and stroke our chins. Sorry, dude.
Yeah. Okay, so this next email, now, we got a lot of emails about the Mac thing, and last episode I said something about, I don't even know what I said, I forget. Something about Macs, you know, the native client, or the Guild Wars 2 client, and Guild Wars client being native for the Mac. Now, we got a lot of them. A lot of them were kind of like, Sean, you need to stop talking about things you don't know anything about, which brings us back to PvP.
Right.
So I just wanted to read this one because I think it explains things really well. It says, hey, Sean Ruby, again for the Mac Linux discussion. I prefer Linux because I click way better with the amount of control you have over your computer. I have a dual boot for Linux, which I use for school. I prefer to use this at home, too. But the only reason I boot Windows and keep it on my computer is because I want to be able to boot Guild Wars anytime I feel like it. I also like to use my Mac for VJing, but again, any computer I have needs to be able to boot Guild Wars natively in seconds. He says, I totally agree on the boot camp part, which is what I mentioned last time. So that leaves me stuck with two computers that all run Windows because I need to be able to run one single game. I'm actually happy to have a netbook that's too slow for Guild Wars, so I at least have one laptop I don't have to worry about installing Windows on. Also, both Linux and Mac are faster with the same hardware than Windows due to way better optimization. And again, you know, the whole thing about the native and all that, it's just, it's, I think a lot of it is preference, personally.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I just want to mention that, you know, really quick, just talking about the, especially the speed of Linux and Mac versus PC. But, you know, with PC is kind of one of those things we're all kind of just stuck with.
Yeah, it's just, there you go. That's your option, such as it is.
Kind of like the iPhone, except ironically that's Apple.
I love my iPhone. Don't mock the iPhone.
Okay, well, we have two more emails to
do
here.
Holy crap.
I know, can you believe it? So this next one, this is from Sugal and Amy, Mythbeast, I guess. Apparently we read an email from them back in July, and this is kind of a follow-up, which I think is really cool. Sugal Mythbeast here again. Can I start by saying that we are absolutely loving your podcast? We listen to it whilst gaming and then re-listen to it while on long car journeys, and it's always very, very entertaining. I would also like to pass on my thanks for your advice back in July. You helped by suggesting we should check out the wiki pages and specialize our builds, and for me, this transformed my character from a mostly ineffective minion master to a kick-ass spiteful spirit necro.
Oh, was this the guy that was stuck in the Shiver Peaks?
Yeah, I think so.
Awesome. Think so.
His minions kept freezing? No.
That was a different guy.
Oh, okay. In other news, my fiancé and I are now married in real life. Congratulations.
Yeah.
And also in game. My wife changed her name from Amy Catlinol, to Amy Mythbeast. And I say Amy, it's A-M-E. Some might say that my surname is not as cool as her maiden name, but we will be Char in Guild Wars 2, so we think it will work quite nicely. Despite breaking to play a bit of Minecraft, thanks to the podcasting and blogging world for dragging us into that.
You're welcome.
Not guilty. We are still playing quite a lot of Guild Wars, and recently achieved 12 points in the Hall of Monuments. So we are the proof that you don't have to be a Guild Wars veteran to get some free Guild Wars 2 loot. All you have to do is enjoy the ride and keep going. If we can go from buying the game in May to almost halfway to 30 so quickly, then anyone can do it. We would like a bit more advice, though, if you don't mind. We would like to join a guild, and we are struggling to find a suitable one. We have listened to Ruby talk about the massively overpowered guild, and it seems to suit our gaming style perfectly. But we are based in the UK and game mostly between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. Pacific time, and we wondered if you guys would be active at that time. If you're not playing at those times, do you know of a nice, friendly, casual guild that would be? We have looked around the blogosphere and have not managed to find anything that is suitable and UK-based. Maybe when Conjure Phantasm finishes his guild search website, this sort of thing will become easier. We are looking for only PvE. We can't always commit to play due to work pressures, but would love to meet other Guild Wars players and chat or team up for some of the tougher content. Here's hoping you can help. Sugal and Amy Mythbeast. 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., so that's, what, 1 p.m.?
I hate time zones. I am, like, time zone impaired. I have no clue what time that is.
Well, Ruby plays all day, so you
can... Shut up! I do not! Okay, here's the thing. We meet at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, U.S. Eastern Time, on Thursday nights. However, we are part of an alliance. Do you like how I just like stepped all over you? I handle this.
No, that's fine.
We are part of an alliance. We are the 10th guild in this alliance.
Wow.
Probably the alliance is completely full. There are probably 400-500 active players in the alliance. Very, very significant percentage of them are European. So even if your time zone does not allow you to play on Thursday nights, the guild is active. The alliance is active pretty much 24/7, 7 days a week. So if you want to, you know, if you want to join Massively Overpowered, even if you can't participate Thursday nights, you guys are never going to lack for someone to play with.
Mm-hmm. And, if he wants to set that up, you have a character specifically for the Massively Overpowered Guild, right, that he can contact?
Yeah, I will add that in the show notes.
Okay. Sounds good.
So look at the show notes, and I will direct you in the correct way.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's been working out really well, not only for the Massively stuff we've been doing, you know, for streaming and all that, but also just, you know, getting people together to play. I mean, it's always hard to start an MMO, or, I mean, not even start, but, you know, you've been playing MMO for a long time, and you want to start playing with, you know, other people, which is kind of the point with a lot of these, that it's good to have people that you at least kind of know, you know?
Well, yeah, have somebody that you're comfortable with and that you can play with, but there are literally hundreds of people active in this guild, and quite a lot of Europeans.
Yeah.
Let's see, I'm trying to think. There are some, and I don't know if you're familiar with Guild Mag, but Dutch Sunshine is one of the Alliance members. He's in there, and quite a few familiar names.
Cool.
Yeah. He's in the Alliance. He's not in the Massively Guild. I should clarify that.
I'm a bad Alliance member. I usually have Alliance chat off, so.
You are a bad person.
I have all the chat channels off. No, I'm just kidding.
You uninstalled, didn't you?
I played the single-player version of Guild Wars. yeah, so this last email actually is kind of along the same lines. And, wow, he just sent this 3 hours ago, so I'm catching up here. This is from Mr. Funktastic, and that's actually Mr. Funktastic. And it says, I'm fairly new to the MVOP guild, that's Massively Overpowered, and I am very behind in loads of the content. I've had the game for a while, but haven't played it religiously, which I'm regretting. But anyway, I was wondering if you guys have special days where you help out newer people get through content and help with filling up the HOM.
Ooh. Okay, there is... I'm trying to figure out how to word this where I don't sound mean. It's just... the Alliance... very, very, very happy to help out. Most of them get a little cranky.
You're so mean.
Shut up. You're not helping. They are thrilled to help. They get a little cranky if you're just begging for a run. And I'm not in any way, shape, or form saying that you want to do this. Mm-hmm. Now, Sean does this, but if you're just, you know, hey, can somebody give me some minis? Can somebody give me a weapon? Can somebody run me here? Can somebody run me there? Can somebody do this mission for me? It's not very well received. I mean, it is like a big family, and as long as you're actively participating, people will, like, fall all over themselves to help you.
Yeah.
They just won't do it for you, so.
Yeah, so, yeah, if you need help with something, join in a few other groups, you know, help people out with some other stuff, and then say, hey, by the way, because what usually happens at the end of these things is it's like, oh, okay, so what's next? And then you say, hey, I need help with this, and then they'll help you out.
And it's not like, I mean, we don't have, like, a whiteboard where we keep a tally or anything.
Yeah.
But it is, you know, everybody pitches in, and that works both ways. So that's, and I want to say like 85 more times, I am not saying in any way, shape, or form that you want to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. That was actually the last email we had.
Yay, we did it.
We are all caught up. But I hope everyone enjoyed this extra long episode. They're always fun. Next week we have possibly a surprise. I don't want to give the surprise away yet because...
aww.
I know. It's
you won't
horrible.
Let me tell anything ever.
I know. I'm horrible. But I just want to make sure that it actually happens, you know, before we say something. That's happened before. But, you know, I just want to make sure that everything, you know, falls into place. And maybe we'll tweet it like the day before and kind of announce what we're doing. But so if you want to, that's a good little segue there into the tweeting thing. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow us. It's just twitter.com/guildcast.
And you do want to follow us on Twitter.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. I have no idea. And we also have the Facebook page, which is a little, you know, group fan page kind of a thing. And then we have the website, guildcast.com, also guildcast.wordpress.com. And that's where the show notes are, where we have, you know, links to everything we've talked about. and you know, who does the music and who does all that other stuff. It's all right there on the show notes for each episode. You can also comment right there on the show notes if you have something you'd like to discuss. But email is usually what we read. You know, we usually don't read the comments just because it's like a you know, a discussion right there that anybody can read. But the email, that's stuff that we can that nobody else can really see, so we make sure to read it.
Yeah.
And you can email us either Sean, S-H-A-W-N, at guildcast.com, or Ruby, R-U-B-I, at guildcast.com, and we will read your email on the air. And I think that's about it, right? I mean, we got a few other ideas coming up for some future shows. We have, we want to, like we talked last week about, we want to get more of a roundtable thing going on. You know, get some people in here and some listeners and talk about certain subjects. And it's going to take some planning, so we might do it like once a month, like the first week of each month. And hopefully we can start that in January. So
yeah, if you're interested, definitely let us know.
Yeah, yeah. If there's a topic that maybe you want to debate, you know, I mean, we might actually throw out topics, you know, maybe on Twitter. We'll say, like, who wants to talk about this topic? You know, let me know. And then... you know, and then you can just go from there and volunteer. But we don't want to have more than maybe like 3-4 people. We don't want to get too crazy. You know, Ruby doesn't shut up, so we just, you know, it'd be a nightmare, right?
I don't like you.
So we'll be doing that on Twitter and, you know, asking people for their opinion on to get together for a roundtable show, and we'll hopefully start doing that in January. So I guess that's about it for this extra long, awesome show.
That was plenty.
Yes, that's what she said. All right, everyone.
How come you get two?
Until next week, this is Sean.
I'm Ruby.
And we'll talk to you then.